Third hour here, Robbie and Rex Road. 1025, 106 for the game, the Hillside Medical Games Studio. Joe Rex Road and vinging in for Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezovic. We're all trying to simmer down from being very upset about this idea of the NCAA tournament going to only Power 5 teams. And we're going to welcome in Teresa Walker from the Associated Press, who can talk about anything. But let me start with that, Teresa. Will you join me in being absolutely outraged at the mention of the NCAA tournament going to all power teams, Power 5 teams?
Well, I'll say this. A team you once covered would be very happy at that, because Middle Tennessee State would never have a chance to upset the number two team, Michigan State, ever again.
There you go.
So think
about how many incredible moments that we'll always remember that would just be washed away.
Exactly. I mean, that's what makes the NCAA tournament so special, is that chance. You know, Murray State, when they had Ja Morant. TSU, when they had a couple of their players come through. Anybody remember Popeye Jones? It's like, Bryce Drew and that incredible shot with Valpo.
I mean, Austin Peay, you know, beating Illinois.
Yes.
Middle Tennessee beating Michigan State.
Right.
Tennessee would probably like it, because then they wouldn't go up against Sister Jean and have lost when they were in good shape, but that's the thing. Those are the moments we remember. Butler making it to the championship game. I mean, hello, you take those teams out of it and turn it into the Power 5 Invitational, and it's going to be boring. It just will, because you lose the chances for Cinderella's. You just miss out on that magic. And, you know, one magic moment or whatever the tune is.
One shining moment.
There you go. Thank you, Adam. The one shining moment, those are usually comprised of the buzzer beaters. And where do many of the first weekend's buzzer beaters come from? Non-Power 5 teams. So, you know, if you just want to kill the product of the NCAA tournament, go right ahead and go with the Power 5s. But it'll be very interesting, because guess what? You're going to be cutting out a lot of people who'd rather be watching.
I remember that 2010 Butler National Championship game fondly.
That's right, yeah. That was like, gosh, a Duke team that wasn't all that great, but won it all.
They came together at the right time, and yes. Gordon Hayward with the half-court heave.
It almost went in. I mean, it's like basically, I understand, it's like the very elementary, like, mindset of, well, the bigger fan bases. So why wouldn't you want all the bigger fan bases watching? And that's just such a misunderstanding of what that event is, that I'm hoping that this is all just a bunch of screaming and yelling for nothing, because it's not ever going to get traction, but I am worried.
Well, and that's the thing, Joe. I mean, we see it going on the football side, seemingly, right? With all the, you know, the way USC and UCLA are now, you know, leaving the Pac-12 for a different conference and changing the college sports landscape. And the biggest worry has been about rivalries in football and basketball. But again, that UTC, I remember a year where Chattanooga went to a Sweet 16, and you get to learn about new teams and their cool nicknames and what makes them special, and, you know, teams that are able to keep, even now in this day and age of the transfer portal, keep teams together and give them a chance to grow something. And then the people who are talking about this, it's like, seriously, what are you thinking? Dollar signs only?
Yeah. So I'm hoping that we're just preemptively stopping something that's never going to gain steam, but we must be vigilant.
Absolutely.
So switching gears, Teresa, to the team that we've been watching a lot of. You and I and a lot of folks out on those steamy practice fields. Right now, as the Titans take a little break in preparation for that first preseason game, maybe if there's one thing that stands out to you about preseason camp so far, just the prevailing story in your mind, what would it be?
Well, I'm going to go with a little bit of an eyeball. Robert Woods. Guys, so much has been made of Treylon Burks, you know, with the trade of A.J. Brown, that Treylon Burks, this rookie's got to come in and absolutely replace A.J. Brown. The thing that's going to ease this entire offense's transition from Julio Jones, A.J. Brown, Anthony Firkser, is the fact that Robert Woods, it's been kind of stunning. The guy tore his left ACL November 12th. and he's out there in the off-season program with a brace, and you're like, okay, good, this is a great step. But then you see him in camp, no brace, and he's just, you know, it's like, did this guy really tear an ACL last year? I mean, is this why he missed the Super Bowl with the LA Rams? And yet we're seeing him do this. So he's been out there building that chemistry. And yes, Treylon Burks, you know, he's kind of the second factor, because one thing we kind of saw last year, you know, there was not a whole lot of, you know, the offense struggled in training camp a year ago. You know, there were a lot of balls being batted, not, you know, hitting the ground. And, you know, this year, you know, Ryan Tannehill's been off to a strong start. And part of that, a big part of that, are the new weapons that John Robinson brought in. Third on that, Austin Hooper. I mean, that's a guy that, you know, this team, you know, when they let Jonnu Smith walk last year in free agency, they never replaced him. And now they've got that piece to come back into this offense. So with Derrick Henry, you know, the fourth one, yeah, we're going to be watching Derrick Henry and his foot the entire year. Every time he goes to the sideline during a series, we're going to be looking. Are they looking at his foot? Is he okay? Oh, he's just getting a breather. Okay. That's what we're going to be doing all season. So, you know, the defense, I'm not too worried about. 10 of 11 starters back, you know, from that playoff game. Yes, they've got to, you know, settle down and see what that young cornerback group can do for them. But the offense and how it can go throwing the ball and giving Ryan Tannehill help to bounce back from all the interceptions, all the sacks last year, that's going to be key. We still have massive questions about the offensive line for sure, but at least now he's got some guys to help him when the pass protection struggles.
Well, and that's you hit on the thing that I thought was the biggest concern going into camp. I still do. I will say on that depth chart yesterday, Teresa, you know, they listed Aaron Brewer and Jamarco Jones as an or situation at starter. I don't buy that. That's not what we've seen. Also interesting that they listed Caleb Farley and Roger McCreary as an or situation, which is interesting. You know, obviously Molden's been out, so McCreary's been in the slot, but I could buy that, I guess, you know, before the end of camp. But the competition right now is at right tackle, right? It's Dylan Radins, Nicholas Petitfrere. Pass protection to me is the number one concern. And if they get it, I'm with you. I mean, I think a lot of things have been addressed around Tannehill other than that. But what do you think of – it's hard to totally get a gauge, right, in camp. And we'll get maybe a little bit better idea if the regulars are out there at all for extended periods in preseason. But what is your read on that offensive line? And in particular, that position battle at right tackle.
Well, that is the true position battle on this offense. I mean, the either or at left guard, it's like we've pretty much just seen Aaron Brewer there at the left guard spot with the ones. When we thought, you know, Jamarco Jones, when he was signed, it's like, well, that's the guy they've got to be going for left guard, right? No, Aaron Brewer, the tougher than a $2 steak guy, undersized around 290, 295, is the guy who's essentially grabbed that spot and just keeps holding on to it. But with, you know, Dylan Radin, you know, he's the second round pick from last year. He's had a year in the NFL. He got that surprise start against the Niners in December. And then yet you've got Nicholas Petitfrere. You know, Dylan Radins came from an FCS school, played one game in all of 2020 because of the pandemic. And then you've got Petitfrere coming in, Big Ten, Ohio State. You know, he looks the part of a starting tackle. And now they've been rotating them and alternating them. And that's the one true competition. And I'm curious. I mean, we're going to have to see more. You know, I'd like to see, you know, the games. You know, I'm hoping that they both get chances to play on Thursday night. Sorry, today's Tuesday. Can you tell it's camp time?
Mm-hmm.
And those joint practices, though, I think are going to be the ones that really tell the tale, you know, against the Bucs and then against the Cardinals. And that one could be a bit, you know, as much as you'd like to hone that down, they've only been in pads for just over a week. So that race may take a bit. On the defensive side, you know, let's face it, when it comes down to Caleb Farley, Roger McCreary, I can't tell if that's a nod to how well McCreary has been playing, or, you know, maybe it's the fact that, you know, it's the NFL. Oftentimes you start the game with three defensive backs out on the field, and you know, and let's face it, the way Roger McCreary has played, he deserves to be considered a starter already, because you just see him making so many plays and playing such sticky defense. It's fun to watch this young man.
Teresa Walker of the Associated Press with us on Robbie and Rex Road. Teresa, you mentioned Thursday night we see the Titans in preseason action for the first time against the Baltimore Ravens. If I'm watching the game and I'm thinking to myself, what is Teresa Walker going to be watching for in this game? What are some things she's going to be keeping an eye on? Because, you know, I trust your judgment more so than a lot of people. What are you going to be looking for? What should I watch?
Well, I'm curious to see who starts the game. Presuming it's Ryan Tannehill, but you know, maybe he goes a series. And then I'm going to be watching Malik Willis and Logan Woodside to see how these two compete and whether, you know, Willis can, he's got enough time. Can he truly push for that number two spot? Or is this going to be just a learning year? The pass protection, because again, of what we were just talking about on the offensive line, you know, Taylor Lewan is healthy at left tackle, but we do have the questions at left guard. We have the questions at right tackle. And then I want to see this defense. I want to see, you know, some of these guys. We feel pretty confident in that front four. Who's going to step up behind them? And can they pick up kind of where they left off last year with one difference? They've got to force some turnovers. So those are the areas that I'm going to be watching and then seeing who rotates in, who takes the field first, and then who's the first to rotate in coming off of the bench after that will tell you an awful lot about who's moved up here through these first 2 weeks of camp.
Yep, will be interesting. And in the meantime, a couple days away from the blazing hot practice field. So enjoy that, Teresa, and we will talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Joe and Adam.
Teresa Walker, Associated Press. When we come back, we will react to some of what Teresa said and get into some of the possible rotations Thursday night for the Titans. Robbie and Rex showed 102.5, 106.3 The Game. I just want to let that play. Way to come in for the chorus. About a young woman in Nashville, Tennessee. Olivia Newton-John, rest in peace. That's a jam. Please, Mr. Please. Welcome back to Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road, Adam Vingan, in for Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezovic. Thank you for playing that.
I like it, too. I approve.
Oh, it's a jam. Also, a jam is the coverage of Titans training camp going on by 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. The best coverage of Titans training camp presented to you by Parman Energy, your one-stop petroleum solution. As for this show, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We're reacting to Teresa Walker, and there is some reaction on the text line driven by WilsonConnieHoney.com. First of all, we'll get back into the Titans. I do want to go ahead and address this. So, on the whole idea, ridiculous idea of, no automatic bids and trying to make this a Power 5 invitational, Maddie says, that will kill college basketball for me. I don't keep up with the full season, but start watching bubble teams near the tournament. T from Clarksville, devil's advocate, when are those teams ever going to win a national title? It can't happen, and those teams may want that chance. So, I've texted him back and said, so the 17-13 crappy Power 5 team that gets in is going to win it? It's a 68-team tournament. There's always going to be tons of teams in a 68-team tournament that aren't going to win it from the start. That's not the point. I mean, you have a tournament that big, there's a select group of teams that really are going to have a chance to win six games, right? Or more if you have to play in a play-in game. But that's...
It's not the point.
No, the first weekend is pure magic in sports. T does respond, I'm with you, it shouldn't happen, I don't want it to happen, but in Austin Peay at Tennessee State, they may rather have a chance at their own tournament. All I'm saying is if they play a tournament with schools their own size and own backing, they may have a chance. It's called a conference tournament, T. That's what they do. They play each other at a neutral site, sometimes home sites, depending on the league, and then you have an incredible celebration and win because you get to be in the NCAA tournament.
There's no B tournament.
No.
No.
It's just, no. I'm sorry, T. It's just, no. It's perfect. I mean, that's the thing. The difference between football's driving the bus, football's more money, football's king, okay? But basketball, men's and women's basketball, have these tournaments that are perfection, and they need to stay the way they are. So there you go. On the Titans front, I had a text here, and I now have.
While you're thinking about breaking news on the tennis front. This is from the New York Times. Serena Williams, the 23-time Grand Slam champion who has been the face of tennis since winning her first U.S. Open in 1999, said Tuesday that she planned to retire from the sport after playing once more in the tournament, which begins later this month.
Wow, so this is it.
And this was from a as told to cover story for Vogue. So she said in an interview with Vogue that she plans on leaving the tennis world after the upcoming
U.S. Open. Wow. Well, you knew it was coming soon. Kudos to Vogue. You know, you don't hear about Vogue getting a scoop like that too often. You know, nice job, Vogue.
You talk about like one of the most dominant athletes ever. We've had this conversation. She's right up there.
Short list. Yeah. Incredible career.
Did you see King Richard?
I did.
Thoughts?
I liked it. I thought it was good. I learned a lot from it. Yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah.
You?
I liked it.
Yeah.
Did you see
it? I saw it all the way around? I did see it, and I liked it as well.
Didn't think it was cringy? That's good.
Didn't think it was cringy.
Well, congrats to Serena. No, I mean, it's very short list. You know, the thing is, the most dominant, you know, tennis players ever on both sides are like still playing right now, right? I mean, really. Although I still hearken back to, like, for me, the Navratilova, Lendl, McEnroe, that era, Borg, Graf, you know,
Sampras, Agassi,
Wielander, like that still is like my glory days. But the best tennis players of all time have been just going on right now.
Patrick Rafter. Do you remember Patrick Rafter?
I do.
He would always be in the finals against Pete Sampras, I feel like,
and then
never
just
win.
Gets like 6-2, 6-3, 6-4. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, did you find
Michael
that text
Chang in the French Open against who the heck? And he was having to underhand serve and eat bananas. Remember this? It was like 89 French Open.
Well, I was born in 1989, so I don't remember that.
You know, 30 for 30.
I don't either.
Man. 30 for 30. Yeah, look it up. He was having cramps, and he had to just like. He would just quickly, like, underhand serve to get the ball in play.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing stuff. Gosh, who the heck was he playing? Someone help me out with that on the
text line. That up while you read the text line that you were looking for.
Well, here's a text, unnamed texter. Don't know if this was discussed already or not. I was just now able to tune in. But is the world ending? Because Jared has had nothing but good to say about Tannehill the past week, it feels like. I feel like, yeah, it's an interesting deal. I didn't hear the whole discussion about Tannehill taking ownership. Again, I think it's a little bit overblown on that front. I think Tannehill's been pretty consistent as a leader, but it is interesting. We've talked about this. I probably ad nauseum at this point, but I don't like. There was nothing that Tannehill was going to do in camp that was going to change how I felt about what's ahead. I suppose if he was throwing picks left and right, you're like, man, what is going on? He's played well, thrown a couple picks. He's going to be good if he gets the support, especially from the offensive line. I think he's going to have a good season.
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday. And by the way, Michael Chang defeated Stefan Edberg in the final of the 1989 French Open.
Oh, wait. Michael Chang won. That's right. He actually won. For some reason, I thought he lost in five sets.
He won in the final 6-1, 3-6, 4-6, 6-4, 6-2.
And that was the cramping. Yeah, there you go. Jeff pops into the text. Thank you, Jeff Edberg. Man, incredible stuff. Incredible stuff.
But in regards to Tannehill, we talked about this yesterday. You know, he is at an age entering his mid-30s, where unless you're a freak of nature, you know, like a Tom Brady, like a Aaron Rodgers. Oh, by the way, I did see a story today referencing something we talked about yesterday. The NFL said that Aaron Rodgers' use of ayahuasca was not against the like their anti-drug policy. So he was good to go using the hallucinogenic drug.
Good for you, NFL.
But when it comes to Tannehill, like I feel like there's a I don't want to say a low ceiling, but oftentimes athletes, quarterbacks at that age, you know, they're not getting significantly better unless I'm forgetting somebody who had like a really late career renaissance, and I'm sure that's happened. But you know, I think, you know, is it possible that he could be the player that accounted for what 40 total touchdowns in 2020? Right, he had 33 passing touchdowns and 7 on the ground. I think
he gets 7 in. Yeah,
yeah. So you know, could he be that player again? Sure, but you know, I mean, I have to think that Tannehill will be better than he was last year. But he may not be as good as he was a couple of years ago. And if he settles into that middle ground and he throws, I don't know, 27 touchdowns and has 9 picks this year or something like that, that's not a bad season. I'm not sure how much. I mean, he can improve on last season because it wasn't very good. But how much better can he get?
Yeah, those guys, you know, Rich Gannon had some of his best ball late. With great Raiders teams. Kerry Collins here.
Yes.
Kind of a disappointment, but he was, you know, very solid here. Alex Smith.
Yes, a guy. Alex Smith is a good one.
There's a guy who, number one, right? Number one overall pick. And, you know, and then obviously finally played, you know, really good football. So it's happened. Yeah, look, Tannehill is the 2020 level of play that everyone talks about and he aspires to. I'm going to say it over and over again. It's the difference between an offensive line that was playing at an incredibly high level early in that season, especially, but really all year it was fine to very good, and what we saw last year. So is this year going to be different? I mean, the investment is in picks. You know, the investment is in in hoping a second round pick pans out, and if not, that a third round pick pans out, because the first round pick flamed out. So can the second round pick from last year or the third round pick from this year give you stability at a very important position? I know you hope that their competition with each other raises the level of play. I mean, I think both of them are playing well. Raiden's definitely is better than a year ago. There's no question. There's no question that he's worked his butt off to try to get there. If he's put in this offseason and he's worked the way he has and it still doesn't work out, you know, then it's probably not going to. And it's going to look like a bad second-round pick. I'm withholding judgment until we really get the answer on him. And like I said yesterday, Adam, that also could be, you know, Dylan Raidens is, he talked about this yesterday. Actually, I think it was Gentry and I were talking to him about just how different, like, he is naturally a left side guy. It's always going to be programmed in his brain. It's just the left side. He's always a left tackle. You know, he's always a left tackle. So
how difficult is that transition?
I think for some people it is challenging.
Like, I'm legitimately curious. That's not me like belittling.
I think some people do enough of both that it's probably easier. You know, it's just like some things. I mean, look, I do some things with both pretty well and other things not, like, right? I mean, even like dribbling a basketball. I'm actually probably a little better with my left hand.
Are you left-handed or right-handed?
I'm right-handed, but I do – but I think for him, if you've been totally programmed on one side, you're just more comfortable there. He's obviously had to work on the right side. Down the road, though, could he be – it may sound scary right now, but could he be the left tackle of the Tennessee Titans? I mean, there's a lot that's at stake right now for what they're doing. And – when we come back, I've got some very strong takes on some very, very clean and very legible notes from Titans camp yesterday. Robbie Rex showed 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Well, attention men, have you been struggling with erectile dysfunction? Well, Hillside Medical Clinic has a breakthrough treatment for ED that does not require any pills, injections, or surgery. And right now, Andrew joins me from Hillside Medical Clinic to tell us all about it. Andrew, what's going on?
Well, that's right, guys. If you're struggling with ED, you're probably sick of those pills. I don't blame you. Hillside Medical Clinic uses the most advanced form of a technology. It's called wave therapy. Gentle pressure waves go through the skin into the blood vessels. It only requires a few 10-minute treatments, and it's clinically proven to get rid of the erectile dysfunction without the use of pills.
So, Andrew, what kinds of studies have been done on this wave therapy technology?
Well, it is extensive. 60 clinical studies. Think of that, from 5 countries all over the world. This is heavily vetted. Even Cambridge University studied this, and it was called the new standard of care for erectile dysfunction.
And Andrew, you've got a special offer if our listeners call in right now.
We certainly do. Guys, if you're ready to end the ED and regain your love life, grab your phone, give us a call. The assessment, exam, and blood flow ultrasound is going to be free this morning. And this very popular gift that produces immediate results in the bedroom, you'll love that. It's worth hundreds of dollars. Call us now. It's all no charge.
You heard it, guys. You can put a stop to your erectile dysfunction by treating the root cause of the problem. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now to qualify for that offer at 615-576-5000. That's 615-576-5000. Put a stop to your ED and regain your love life. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now at 615-576-5000.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Joe Rex Road here with Adam Vingan in for Robbie Stanley this week, Michelle Knezovic, and we're talking Titans, and we're talking notes from yesterday. I mean, this is the last day of practice notes for, I mean, the next open practice is going to be Saturday. They're off today. They travel to Baltimore tomorrow. They play Thursday. There's just a Vrabel presser Friday. So the next time anyone's going to be able to watch them practice will be Saturday. And by then, let's be honest, fans will have seen a preseason game. There's a lot of people who won't play in the preseason game. I will disagree with what Teresa Walker said earlier. I could be wrong. I don't think Ryan Tannehill's going to get a series. I don't think he's going to get a snap in this game. In fact, I wouldn't be shocked if Tannehill, Henry, and some Simmons, some people like that, don't even make the trip. Vrabel was non-committal on that question, too. But we'll see.
A good trip to Baltimore, you know?
Yeah. Man. I mean, the place Jimmy White took us last time for those crab cakes, I wish I remember. It was like
Inner Harbor, somewhere in there.
Oh, my gosh. Those crab cakes. But they were so loaded with crab. Like, it was all crab. And that, like, kind of expands in your stomach. I may have overeaten a little bit. I know, shocker. News flash on that one.
I've eaten enough times with you to know.
Yeah, you've seen it. Yeah.
We are on a different journey now, though, Joe.
Yeah, you've seen it unfold. By the way, someone on the text line asked how my journey's going. Down 11. Down 11. Let's go.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. I'm trying to be good. Salad. Mix in those salads. Had a nice salad last night. These are the last notes of a Titans practice for a while. And again, after a preseason game, there's some level of sort of mystery that fades away for fans, right? Now, there's still going to be good practices with the Bucs and Cardinals. Like, there's a lot of good stuff still to report on, but this is kind of an end of a phase. And I only had two pages of notes, but one thing that kind of, not just from yesterday, but from the last few days, that I would make as an observation right now, there's a little bit of a seesaw effect going on at receiver for me, at rookie receiver. Treylon Burks, I'd say, looks like maybe hitting a little bit of a wall. He just hasn't made as many plays recently. He's not, like, fallen off majorly or anything. But yesterday he kind of got chewed out for not running a route the way it was supposed to be run, which led to the ball being a little bit too out in front of him, which led to a drop. There was a misalignment by him on one play as well. And again, this is happening. I mean, look, Mason Kinsey ran the wrong route the other day. He's been around a little bit. You know, Kyle Phillips, we've talked about, has been chewed out by Tannehill a couple days ago for running one wrong. But Phillips is on the other side of the seesaw for me. He is surging. Kyle Phillips making plays all over the place, without question. Actually, Michelle got some comments from Kyle Phillips. We're going to listen to that right now.
I'm real excited, you know. It's hard not to, you know, look forward and think about the game, but each day I'm just kind of focused on getting better and better and trying not to look too far ahead. A little bit, but, you know, like I said, I'm trying not to look too far ahead. You know, still got a couple more days of practice, so I'm just going to take it one day at a time and get better. It's good, you know, I'm just coming in each day and trying to earn more trust from him, you know. I feel like we have a pretty good connection, so we're just going to try and keep that going. And, yeah, it's gone up tremendously. You know, the first day, you know, I was going with the ones, a little bit of jitters here, but – each day, you know, been able to catch a couple balls, and so
feel like I belong. I feel comfortable and ready to play some football.
Yeah, I'm real excited for it, and I just want to show that, you know, I'm a reliable receiver. Whatever the team needs, I'll give it to them. They want me to go block someone, I'll go block them. Need to make some catches, you know, I'll go catch the ball.
Yeah, I think I'll take a little bit of a moment, enjoy it for a little bit, but then it's, you know, time to block in and play the game.
How about some seamless editing there?
I was going to say, great editing, but also that is a young man who knows his sports cliches.
and no doubt.
That is a young man who has been coached, I'm sure.
Yeah, thanks, Chip Kelly.
One day at a time. What else was in there? Just trying to help the team in any way I can. Yep. Not get, you know, all that stuff. It was just,
God willing, I can help the team. Yes. Yeah.
Be more selfish, Kyle Phillips.
Well, I will say one thing, Kyle Phillips, coming off the practice field yesterday, Naquan Jones, Michigan State product, terrific defensive lineman, find for the Titans, actually started yelling at us, the reporters, to say, please tell Kyle Phillips that the Bruins are going to get like crushed when they go to cold weather stadiums in the Big Ten. So that was a nice little argument. And by the way, Kyle Phillips, very confident the Bruins are going to be fine. They haven't been very good in the Pac-12 either. But anyway, we'll talk about the ridiculousness of college sports soon. But on the receiver room, you know, Kyle Phillips is making a lot of plays. I feel like there's a pretty clear room for me. I agree with Teresa, what she said earlier. I think Robert Woods is one of those stories of camp that, although he's a known commodity, which to me kind of puts someone on the back burner a little bit in camp, usually, he is coming off the ACL. He looks absolutely fine. He's been a tremendous add. He's going to be, I think, the leading receiver on this team this year. So Woods, you know, Burks is going to make plays for this team. Don't know how many. Don't know exactly what his level of participation will be early in the season, but he's very important. Nick Westbrook Akine, per him, we're going to change his pronunciation. He's going to be a key player too. He and Tannehill have a really good connection. But look, after that, I mean, Kyle Phillips is going to be on this team, and I think he's going to help this team. I think Kyle Phillips on third down, third and five, third and seven, move the chains. That's a guy that you just, you know, he should win matchups in those situations. His feet are terrific. And he, again, to me, he's doing more downfield lately. He's really impressing of late. So there's your four. And then my fifth guy absolutely is Racy McMath. And I'm really interested to see if Racy McMath can actually be that take the top off the defense guy in situations, in spurts, on occasion, that could help this offense. I don't think he's going to be a regular heavy snap guy by any means. Everybody I just mentioned, they're going to get the bulk of the snaps. But Racy McMath is making this team, in my mind. And I'm excited to see. Like, a guy like that, I could see maybe getting some action Thursday, you know?
My question for you is this. So tell me if I'm being hyperbolic here. But I felt like there was some talk around town at this time last year that the Titans offense had greatest show on turf potential.
No, boy. Oh, yeah.
There was it because you had A.J. Brown emerging. You had Derrick Henry coming off a 2,000-yard season. You had Julio Jones in the fold. You had Ryan Tannehill coming off of a great season. Obviously, a lot of things went wrong. That didn't happen. So now you're replacing at least that receiver. So last year, you had A.J. Brown, you had Julio Jones, you had Nick Westbrook Akine, you had Anthony Firkser, if you want to throw him into that mix, right? For, you know, in terms of pass catching. Mm-hmm. You had Chester Rogers. Those were the
Marcus Johnson. And Josh Reynolds was supposed to be a key member of that.
But so you've got that group from last year. So this year you have Robert Woods, Treylon Burks, Austin Hooper, you have Westbrook Akine. You have Kyle Phillips potentially. Do you think that the group of pass catchers this season is better than the group of pass catchers last season? I mean, the group of pass catchers last season, namely Julio Jones and A.J. Brown, had a bit more name recognition than some of these guys. But do you think that this group of receivers / receiving tight ends is going to be more effective than last year's group?
Yeah, if you put them all together, including tight ends, and you're adding Austin Hooper, and you're adding Chigakonkwo, who, again, I continue to be intrigued by him. I think it's a clear yes in terms of variety. Clear yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's also a clear yes in terms of availability so far.
Yes, that is now, very much for
me. I mean, it's not even close when you take that into account. Is the upside as high? No. I mean, A.J. Brown, and again, a year ago, you got to go back to a year ago, too, what you thought at the time. Still thought Julio Jones had tremendous seasons left in him, at least one or two left in him.
Yeah.
And probably that's not true and ever going to be true.
That's going to be an intriguing storyline come that joint practice with the Buccaneers.
Oh, yes, it will. If Julio is participating.
I don't know how much he's been practicing at Buccaneers camp, but
I know early on he lit it up, but he did that here too. So, but no, I think it is better. My question is, especially with an A.J. Brown, and we've talked about this, but he's a guy who can manipulate a defense. He's a guy who can take over a game. So just having one guy like that, I know a lot of Titans fans want to just – you know, want to discard him and diminish what he was, but he was special. He is special. And that's my question is, without that kind of guy, how does that affect the whole? We'll continue on that thought after this break. Robbie Rexler, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie Rexrode, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, Hillside Medical Game Studio, talking Titans. Getting through these notes. All right, let me get to the notes. I promised the notes. I'm going to get to the notes. They are short. I'm going to be quick and hit the key points. One key point, other than, like I've been talking about, we've been talking about the receivers, Dylan Raidens, Nicholas Petitfrere, they are absolutely in a battle. That's a position battle. Left guard on the depth chart says it's a battle. That's not a battle. That's Aaron Brewer. Cornerback says Farley or McCreary. Yeah, I'm keeping an open mind. McCreary has been playing the slot with Elijah Molden out, and he was out again yesterday. But I'm going to keep an open mind on McCreary having a chance to challenge Farley. I just think Farley, there's goods, there's bads with him. But overall, guy looks like a starting cornerback in the NFL to me and maybe a plus starter for this team if he can keep, you know, stay healthy, move the way he's moving. He's got some traits that are potentially special. Yesterday, NWI, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, two drops early. Kind of surprising. Christian Fulton would maybe get credit for a PBU on the first one, but it's jarring to see Westbrook-Ikhine ever drop the ball. I'm sorry, Westbrook-Ikhine. I'm sorry. Let's just go NWI. So that's an interesting development. Shakir Brown, Michigan State, unsigned, recent signee. In for McCreary getting those slot reps because McCreary was out yesterday. Don't know why. Could be a day off. More likely a minor injury. Was on the bike, but Shakir Brown making some plays and getting some plays made at his expense. Julius Chestnut, a long touchdown. Running back, rookie from Sacred Heart. A fantastic Malik Willis pass to Briley Moore. Keep Briley Moore's name in your mind. I'm watching him Thursday. I think he's making a run to try to be that fourth tight end. Tommy Hudson, probably the favorite, but keep an eye on Briley Moore. I think a practice squad spot at least would be possible for him. But you know what? He's also a guy, if you leave him exposed, you never know. Phillips with a terrific move on a slant, beating Shakir Brown. Dupree would have had a sack on one play. Had another big-time catch from Phillips. Mason Kinsey with a really good catch against Brown on the sideline, which brings me to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Got a few different questions on these matters. One of them is about Kinsey, and I'm going to find it here from, gosh darn it, Will from Nashville. Okay, he says, okay, you believe Phillips makes the team and maybe plays meaningful minutes? Yes. Phillips is going to make the team, and I think Phillips is going to beat like a lot of dedicated slot guys. Those obvious passing situations, he's going to be out there. Like, again, when they're in too tight, which I think they're going to be in more this year, you know, you're going to have two big outside receivers. I mean, like, when they come out this at the opening series, I expect Robert Woods and Nick Westbrook-Ikhine to be out there. I think Treylon Burks will have a role for sure, and I think Kyle Phillips will have that role in those passing situations. Will from Nashville asks, does Kinsey make it? Also, any kicking game, punting and kicking changes expected? No, on the last part. We'll see. Could Stonehouse push Kern? We'll see. Randy Bullock has kicked extremely well in camp, and there's no competitor right now anyway. And Mason Kinsey, no. He's not going to make the team, I don't believe. That'd be a huge upset. He's been a really nice – he was a preseason story last year. He's been a very good practice player. He's good. I think he's probably a practice squad guy this year. Also on the text line, it's Tony in Smyrna, also known as Scott. Any Fitzpatrick comments? So, to me, Dez Fitzpatrick is number 6 in the pecking order. Dez Fitzpatrick is better than last year. There's no doubt.
I would hope so.
He's also faded a bit lately. Now, remember, this always has to be considered. Some of these, you're watching guys make plays. There's still quarterbacks making decisions as to who they're throwing to. He actually had a really nice route and catch yesterday. But he had a couple days, like last week, where it was like, ooh, Dez Fitzpatrick. I think he's going to make it. I think he's going to be the 6th receiver. But I'm not confident in that. And to me, Racy McMath, kicking game is considered here too. I think he's ahead of him for sure now. He has really worked hard to become a receiver who can do different things out there. I wasn't sure that was going to happen. So Dez Fitzpatrick is definitely one of those guys who's going to be nervous around cut time. And these preseason games are big for him. Make those plays when they're available to you.
No, for sure. And I know that Dez Fitzpatrick had a rough camp last year. So I would hope that he
got cut.
Yeah. How often does that happen where a rookie wide receiver gets cut?
You moved up to get middle rounds. No, it doesn't happen a lot. They were upset. Almost, I would say upset last camp.
Disappointed.
And Mike Vrabel was calling it out at times. I mean, he's responded, but it's just look, Racy McMath. there just aren't many guys like him. So it's interesting. We got a caller on the phone line, driven by WillScottHoney.com. We got Adam from Portland. Adam, what's going on?
Going on, man. Hey, pretty exciting the lifestyle change you're going through there, man. I'm happy to see it. I think it's cool for you. Good for you.
Thanks.
I'll kind of piggyback off of that. You could be the inspiration for me. How about that?
Let's do it.
Yes, sir.
Alfalfa sprouts.
The wind beneath his wings, so to speak.
Hell yeah, man. All right, so I know you guys are, super, hyper-focused on the offense because they're obviously what we have to worry about. I don't think the defense is too big of a struggle, but if you're looking at, a weak point on the defense, I saw Roquan Smith. I have to put my fanboy hat on for a second and go, oh, my God, it'd be so great to have that guy in the middle of our defense. But I think of, Monty Rice. This guy, number one, he was a reach, I think, when we picked him. He's not very big. He's not very fast. He doesn't do anything great, and he stays hurt. So I'm thinking, that's the weak spot of the defense. I doubt very seriously we'll be able to have the leverage to push to get a player like Roquan Smith. But still, man, I do not like that spot at linebacker.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Adam. Roquan Smith, by the way, this is something we can get into a little bit later, too. So we're up against it, but demanding a trade? Asking for a trade?
Requesting
a trade?
Requesting.
Heck of a player. Yeah, look. So here's my quick take on the Titans linebackers. And for one thing, I would rule this out as any kind of possibility when you decide to pay Zach Cunningham. It's not going to happen. But I like the Titans at starter a lot there. The depth there is one of the most concerning spots. And Monty Rice, I'm not sure what he can or can't do yet, honestly. I know there's some people in that building who believe he can be a very good player. But they absolutely agree with you, Adam, on availability. You got to have it. So we'll see if that comes about here. They need a clear third guy. Chance Campbell impresses me out there. They've got some other options, but it's not ideal. But you paid Zach Cunningham. You're going to lean on those starters. Obviously, Zach Cunningham is really a two-down backer, but he's a heck of a two-down backer. And David Long, I think, is going to be a really, really good player this year for the Titans. When we come back, we're going to shift gears a little bit. We'll get back to the Titans later. We're going to talk with Chris Vanini from The Athletic about college football, SMU's craziness, and this Big Ten SEC TV battle brewing. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3. 6-3, the game.